task list, but fending off low-return tasks lets you maintain that clear mental space. From then on, whenever I came up with an unrealized idea or thought, I added it in the notepad I carried around with me everywhere I went, which over time evolved into a smartphone. Whenever I thought of something to pick up at the store, I would write it down before the thought escaped me. And if I noticed even the smallest item weighing on my psyche, I would externalize it to create more attentional space for bigger and better things. If that sounds obsessive, that's because it is. But except for meditation, nothing has helped me think more clearly. 10 years later, almost every thought I have is new because I make a note of anything important right away so I can deal with it or build on it later. Anyone can and should do the same. You'll be stunned at how many tasks, projects, and commitments you're keeping up there, and how clear your head will feel once you gather it all in one place. Your brain is much better at focusing on the task at hand when you have a clear mind. The system I love. Of course, merely making a note of the tasks and projects on your plate isn't enough. If you don't do anything with what you've captured afterward, you won't clear up any mental space, because you'll go right back to stressing about what you still have to get done. Over the last decade or so, and especially during my project, I experimented with using dozens of to-do list and task management apps that deal with the tasks and projects I've captured, and although many of them have worked well, there isn't one I'd recommend above the others. In my experience, it doesn't matter how you organize your tasks and projects, as long as you find it helpful and user-friendly. Today, I have a relatively simple way of capturing and organizing everything I have to get done. Throughout the day, as tasks, ideas, and other open loops grab at my attention, I put them in the Notes app of whatever device is in front of me. The Notes app I use syncs between all my devices. And every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, after I check my email, I go through the notes I've compiled and add them to my to-do list or calendar. My to-do list also couldn't be simpler. It's another note that I've pinned to the top of my list of notes that contains my 3 daily and weekly intentions at the top and my task list underneath. I also maintain a calendar in which I try to schedule as little as possible. After experimenting with every task management app under the sun, the workflow I've fallen into is simple. Since my app syncs my notes between my devices, it's mindlessly easy to collect tasks, thoughts, and ideas whenever and wherever they come to me. When I'm away from my devices, like after my 8 p.m. shutoff ritual, I just carry a small pen and notepad around in my pocket. While the apps and devices I use change frequently, I also often revert back to using paper. Regardless of how I've organized everything, though, my basic workflow of capturing and then organizing the tasks on my plate has stayed the same for years, and the process has become seamless. How to organize it all. Because everyone's way of working is different, I won't recommend a specific organizational tool. It isn't about which method of organizing your tasks is best, but what's best for you. A large percentage of the most productive people I know use a pen and paper, and it's important to not discount this option. But if you're looking for a system, it's worth looking for something similar to what I've settled into, something that's almost invisible to you because it integrates so well with the way you work. It should also let you easily view, manage, and prioritize everything you have to get done so that you can effortlessly pull together ideas, events, tasks, and projects. As I experimented with corralling the open loops from my head, I discovered a number of other things that, in addition to to-dos and calendar events, are worth capturing. Two of these are straight out of getting things done: a waiting for list and project notes. And the rest are ideas I've experimented with myself with a lot of success. Here are the best tools I've discovered to help you organize and deal with all your tasks and projects. A waiting for list. My absolute favorite golden nugget out of getting things done, apart from the power of externalizing what's in your head, is the waiting for list. I like to think of the waiting for list as your to-do list's sexy secret lover. It's pretty much what it sounds like, a list of everything you're waiting on, which, like a to-do list, you review on a regular basis to make sure nothing slips through the cracks. Right now, I can say with near certainty that you're waiting on several things you're simply storing in your head, things that may slip through the cracks if you don't follow up on them. On a given week, my waiting for list contains everything from packages I'm waiting for from Amazon, to important email responses I'm expecting, to money I'm owed, to important calls and letters I'm waiting for. I put pretty much everything on my list. Because I schedule time to review my list 3 times a week, during my project, I also begin to review my waiting for list after I check for new email. Over the last several years, after I settled into a habit of capturing the things I have been waiting for, nothing has slipped through the cracks, and I worry way less about everything I have to manage. Once you capture something, you can immediately stop worrying about it. I also keep my waiting for list in my notes app so everything is in one place, and group the items on the list by their context, like home, things I'm owed, email, phone, etc. Another great way to capture what you're waiting for is after you send important emails that need responses, drag the message into a waiting for folder. This also helps you catch any important email responses that might land in your spam folder. Individual project notes. Keeping separate notes about projects is another golden nugget I love from getting things done. While a simple task, like picking up a few things from the store after work, is a one-off thing, a project is anything that requires more than a few simple steps to complete and has an end or due date. In my notes app, I also keep a separate note for each project I'm tackling. Right now, I have individual notes for trips I'm planning, speaking engagements I'm prepping for, and even one for writing this book. Every project note contains information about each project that I need to keep in mind to move the projects forward, and, most important, the very next actions I need to take with each project. Having a separate note for each project not only lets me externalize the projects I'm in the middle of, but it also helps me logically plan out the next steps I need to take to move each project forward. The titles of all my project notes start with PRO. So they're all in one place when I scroll through my list of notes in alphabetical order. Every maintenance day, I scan through my list of projects to define their next steps and pull to-dos from them to add to my task list and the intentions I set for the week. Because of this, even though I'm often taking on dozens of projects at one time, I hardly ever think about them because I know that past Chris has taken care of things and captured everything that present Chris and future Chris needs to deal with at the start of every week. A lot of projects take more attention than they do time. For example, if you have to give a 30-minute presentation, even though it's only half an hour, if you're like me, you'll spend hours thinking and worrying about the talk leading up to when you give it. Externalizing your projects helps you get them out of your head so you can move them forward every week. And when you're not planning, focus on what's in front of you. A worry list. One afternoon, between finishing university and starting my year-long productivity project, I had a lot on my mind. Worrying about everything from whether I should accept a full-time job or start AYOP, to what I was going to do for health insurance after graduating, to what my living situation would be like. I created a project note for each decision, with next actions clearly defined, but I still couldn't stop worrying about them. So I externalized the very act of worrying. To reclaim more attentional space, I made a list of everything I was worrying about, most of which I was blowing out of proportion, of course, and scheduled an hour every day to think through everything on the list. If I caught myself worrying about something throughout the day, I reminded myself that I had scheduled time to worry later. And if I started worrying about a new thing during the day, I captured it on the list so I could worry about it later as well. Most of the time I don't need this list, but if I ever feel like things are spiraling out of my control and want to clear some headspace, I create a list to clear my mind. An inbox review. When you look around, you quickly realize just how many inboxes you have. I define an inbox as any place where you store the expectations other people have of you, such as responding to emails, tweets, Facebook messages, voicemails, LinkedIn invites, physical letters, or any place you store the expectations you have for yourself, such as listening to podcasts, sorting the papers on your desk, or going through research you've bookmarked. I'm a completionist at heart and like to stay on top of messages people send me. But like many people, the number of inboxes I've built up over time is overwhelming. That's why, on maintenance days, I completely review and empty all my inboxes that accumulate items over the course of the week. I also make sure to clear out the ideas and tasks I accumulated over the weekend in my notes app. Potpourri. If you want to dive even deeper into externalizing the open loops in your head, here are a few more of my favorite ways to do so. Notepads everywhere. I love capturing ideas as they come to me, but because I shut my phone off between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m., it's not always possible to capture them on my phone. For that reason, I keep physical notepads everywhere. I keep a shower-proof AquaNotes notepad in the shower for when ideas bubble up in the shower. I keep a notepad on my bedside table with a light-up pen designed to be used by pilots to write down any ideas that come up as I fall asleep or wake up. And when I head out without my phone, I carry around a notepad in my pocket to jot down ideas that come up. Ideas, tasks, and insights only have value when you capture and then act on them. Keeping notepads everywhere has helped me hold on to a ton of them. Simpler passwords. Passwords are a pain to remember. I've solved this two ways. I have a password manager that stores all my passwords and fills them in automatically. I recommend either 1Password or LastPass. I also have a simple system for coming up with new passwords. My password for every website and service is simply the name of the website, but instead of typing the name of the website, I type the letter to the left of each letter of the website on my keyboard. Google turns into F-I-I-F-K-W, and then tack on a unique series of letters, numbers, and symbols at the end that are the same with every password. So 8S5X8 to make F-I-I-F-K-W 8S5X8. This makes every password unique, impossible to guess, and best of all, impossible to forget. Filing emails. Some things aren't worth keeping in your head, and that includes where you keep archived emails. A recent study by IBM compared email users who stored emails in folders and users who archived emails and searched for them later. On average, it took participants 66.07 seconds to search for an email and 72.87 seconds to find an email in a folder. And these times didn't take into account the time users spent sorting their emails into folders in the first place. It's not worth your time or attention to file and retrieve emails. Search for them instead. Taking productivity too far. Since being inspired by getting things done a decade ago, I found that there is a line that's relatively easy to cross, after which you begin to spend too much time managing and planning what you have to do instead of getting real work done. Working more deliberately is at the heart of productivity, but it's possible to take the idea too far. This is a trap I think a lot of people fall into when they become interested in productivity, and I include myself in this group. From what I've found, the most productive people are the ones who strike a balance between the two extremes, who understand the power of capturing and organizing what they have to get done, but who also don't sacrifice real work in favor of being productive about productivity. Research shows that the simple act of making a to-do list makes you less likely to get work done, because creating a task list simulates getting actual work done, even though it doesn't lead you to accomplish anything. To carve out more attentional space, I think it's crucial that you perform a brain dump of everything on your plate and capture open loops as they grab at your attention throughout the day. But it's also important you're mindful that you don't take things too far. Just because you feel productive doesn't mean you actually are. And this is something to keep in mind as you round up and organize everything on your plate. Getting Things Done sits proudly on my bookshelf to this day, turned to face outward, while only the spines of the other books I've acquired are exposed. I think it speaks volumes that over the last decade, the system has become so integrated into the tapestry of my work and life that I don't notice that I'm practicing it. That being said, I've never adopted it in its entirety. The system is pretty complex, and it's too easy to take it too far. To his credit, David has said many times that the crucial part about the getting things done methodology isn't that you follow it to a T. It's that you externalize and organize everything you have to get done. You can take the parts that work for you and leave the rest. Quote, give yourself a couple of hours and literally grab every single thing that has your attention, he told me. You don't have to go very far. Just start to notice what has your attention. End quote. The pros of externalizing everything on your plate outweigh the cons by a massive margin. But it's important to be mindful that you don't take this tactic or any other tactic in this audiobook to the extreme. Productivity techniques exist to help you work smarter, but they're only useful when you still do the work. The Capture Challenge. Time required, 20 to 30 minutes. Energy and focus required, 9 out of 10. Value, 9 out of 10. Fun, 9.5 out of 10. Wow. What you'll get out of it. Even though it might not look like it on the surface, this is perhaps the most fun and freeing challenge in the audiobook. You'll clear up an incredible amount of attentional space to focus on important things throughout the day and become able to totally invest yourself in your work, feeling much calmer and confident that you're on top of your work and that nothing will slip through the cracks. One of the biggest lessons I learned from my project, especially when it came to making changes to the way I lived and worked, was that the smaller the change I tried to make, the more likely I was to succeed at making it. Smaller changes are also far less intimidating, which makes them more likely to actually stick. This is why so many of these challenges are on the smaller side. Not only does that make you more likely to actually do them, but after you do them, they're more likely to remain and help you become more productive. If you create a workout habit and allow yourself to only work out for 5 minutes a day, you're going to be dying to work out more by the end of the week. This holds particularly true when externalizing the tasks, projects, and other open loops in your head. The value of capturing everything in your mind is immense, but it's also easy to dive in too deep and get discouraged, or dive in too deep and take things too far. My challenge for you is to perform the brain dump ritual, the same ritual that got me hooked on productivity. Shut off all your devices and sit down with only a notepad and a pen. Capture everything in your mind that bubbles up to the surface and grabs at your attention, whether it includes tasks or projects you have to get done, things you're worrying about, things that have slipped through the cracks, or things you're waiting for. Once you write down everything that is drawing your attention, I think you'll want to start managing everything in an external system, if only to make the good feeling last. Chapter 16. Rising Up. Takeaway. Doing a weekly review of your tasks and accomplishments not only gives you a better perspective on your wins and the areas you need to improve, it also gives you more control over your life. Adding in hotspots is a powerful addition to this technique that will keep you on the right path. Rising up. After I began to capture the tasks, projects, and concerns in my head, I found another unanticipated benefit. In getting things done, there is an important weekly review ritual where you look over everything you've captured and organized throughout the week, including your projects, waiting for list, and more. Seeing all your tasks, projects, and commitments from a bird's eye view is exhilarating. Not only because it lets you plan for the week ahead and make sure nothing slips through the cracks, but also because it gives you a new perspective on your life. Whenever I scrolled through my list of tasks and projects and everything else, I felt like I was in an airplane, seeing the city I lived in quickly shrink beneath my feet. The tasks I was in the middle of, the carves on the streets below, became insects. I could see how much I was trying to do at once, and how much space I had carved out between them. The tasks I was tackling, the buildings and parking garages below, also shrank, and I could see how they fit together to make up the bigger picture of my life. And I could begin to think about the commitments I was taking on, the neighborhoods that the cars and buildings were placed in. It's crucial to rise up above your daily life every once in a while, so you can see it from a new, more distant perspective. And doing so lets you adjust course and make changes if you need to. But it's possible to rise up even higher. And this is where the simple idea of hotspots comes in. Productivity and control. What attracts a lot of folks to productivity books is their promise to help them regain control over everything they have to get done. I love feeling in control over what I'm responsible for. Every task, project, and open loop I cleared from my conscience gave me a bit more attention to focus on the task at hand, which gave me more control over my work, which let me become more productive. Today, even though I have more to do than ever before, I have more control over my work than ever before. When you step back and regain control over your work, you can work smarter, more deliberately, and with more purpose, which makes it infinitely easier to become more productive. The tactics I've spoken about so far have helped me reclaim an incredible amount of time and attention, which has given me more time, attention, and energy to spend on what's actually important. But of all the tactics we've discussed so far, no tactic will help you feel more in control of your life than this one. Externalizing your tasks and projects helps you focus more, worry less, and snowball your ideas and projects forward. But, believe it or not, you can take things up yet another notch or two and feel even more in control over your work and life after you capture your tasks and projects. Hotspots is a fancy name for a very simple idea, an idea that let me feel more in control of my work than I ever had before. Hotspots let you see your work and life from 10,000 feet. Your life boiled down to one list. During my productivity project, I discovered something interesting about the different techniques that are supposed to help you organize or take control of your life. Most of them aren't worth your time. I think the return on any productivity method has to be huge, because for every minute you invest in your productivity, you lose 1 minute of doing actual work. Luckily, hotspots fit the bill. Your hotspots are the portfolio of your life. From a very high level, all your tasks, projects, and commitments can be categorized into one of 7 basic hotspots, a term that J.D. Meyer coined. According to J.D., we have 7 areas in which we invest our time and attention and energy every day. Mind, body, emotions, career, finances, relationships, and fun. 90% of the people I've met fit their commitments into these 7 life areas, even if they call them something else like home or spiritual. What you name your hotspots doesn't matter as much as having a list of very high-level life areas that fit everything you're responsible for. A simple list of your 7 hotspots, of course, isn't all that powerful. But when you expand the areas to list all the commitments you have in each part of your life, the list springs to life. For example, on my list of hotspots, I've expanded my mind hotspot to hold all the commitments and responsibilities that fall under the heading of mind. Things like learning through books, Instapaper, podcasts, audiobooks, and RSS feeds, meditation, reading, music, mindfulness, slowing down and working more deliberately, making more attentional space between work and life elements, and stress relief through meditation, reading, and listening to music. The basic idea behind the technique is that once a week, You review your list of hotspots to think about how much time you spent in each one during the previous week, and to think about what to focus on and think about in the week ahead. It took me a few weeks to collect all the commitments and responsibilities that I had under each hotspot, but once I did, I could look at the list and see my life expanded right there in front of me. I would see dental under my body hotspot, remember that I hadn't been to the dentist in a while, and book an appointment. I would see my parents listed under my relationships hotspot and remember to give them a call the next week. I would see separating from work on weekends under fun and realize that I had been working too hard. And I would see mindfulness under my mind hotspot and make an effort to be more mindful in the week ahead. Week after week, I collected tasks that would have otherwise fallen through the cracks and scheduled them the very next week. Every week, as I pored over the list and thought a little about each item and what I needed to change in the week ahead and evaluated how I did the previous week, I rose above my tasks, projects, and commitments as if I could see my life from 10,000 feet. And best of all, I set the course for the week ahead. Tilting. It's pretty much impossible to act deliberately 100% of the time. This is what makes productivity more of an art than a science. After reflecting on my first log, I noticed how hard I was on myself because I could have been so much more productive than I was. But as I discovered through my interviews and experiments, no one acts deliberately or productively all the time. What separates the most productive people from everyone else is that they make course corrections every week to gradually get better at everything they do. And creating an expanded list of my life's hotspots is the best tool I've found to make course corrections every week. Every maintenance day, I look through the expanded areas of my life and ask myself a few questions, some from JD and some that I discovered during my year of productivity. Questions like, what do I need to spend more time on next week? What did I spend too much time on last week? What do I need to schedule or do next week? What do I have to be mindful of next week? What are some unresolved issues I'm having in each area? What opportunities do I have in each of my hotspots next week? What obstacles will get in the way of my goals next week? Am I going in the right direction with all my commitments? Are there any commitments I need to add or remove, expand or shrink? What did I knock out of the park last week? To this day, this reflection helps me make course corrections and act more in accordance with my values and goals every week, without getting in my way too much. While no one acts in accordance with their values all the time, the most productive people act in accordance with their values in the long run. And they do this by regularly making course corrections and finding what they need to improve on week after week. Even though in the short run, crises erupt and unimportant things eat into your time and attention, when you deliberately make adjustments every week, in the long run, you will be able to act in accordance with what you care about. I think the most productive people also spend some time thinking about which of their hotspots are the most important in their lives and whether they need to tilt in the short run to focus on one more than the others. It's like spending more time on your career early on in adult life to ensure your advancement and give yourself the resources you can use later for other things. In my case, I tilted toward my career hotspot by pouring a ton of time, attention, and energy into my year of productivity project because I knew the long-term return on the work I did would be worth it. Another great part about keeping a list of hotspots is that if one hotspot goes to hell, it doesn't take down your entire portfolio. For example, if you lose your job, the strengths of your relationships, finances, and emotions hotspots will help to sustain you until you find another one. Looking over my list of hotspots has become one of my favorite weekly rituals. Nothing has helped me work and live more deliberately. Last list, I promise. Scanning through your list of hotspots is a powerful ritual, but I found one additional cool use for the list. The thing about your scannable list of hotspots is that it's relatively static. You'll never stop having commitments like visiting the dentist, phoning your parents, remembering to disconnect, or being mindful. But what does change on a weekly basis is what projects you take on, the elements of your work and life that have natural start and end dates and require more than a few simple steps to complete. For years, I had been keeping separate notes for the projects I was tackling so I could externalize them, but I had never created a master list of them all. There are hundreds of apps programmed around the getting things done methodology that would have let me do this, but again, none of them stuck because so many of them got in the way of me actually doing good work. Then I came up with the simple idea of creating a master list of my projects with the projects grouped under each of my hotspots. Much like creating a scannable list of hotspots, this list is refreshingly simple, but also amazingly powerful. Under my finances hotspot on the list, I keep projects like pay off student loan, do taxes, spend less money on eating out and delivery, create a budget for next year, save up for a vacation in Ireland. Just as my hotspot list lets me fly above my life, my master projects list, once I filled it out, quickly let me fly above the work I had in progress, as well as every change I was trying to make in each area of my life. It also let me jog my memory for the projects I needed to focus on in the week ahead, as well as areas where I needed to improve. Keeping this list continually updated takes time, but I use my master projects list every week to rise above the areas of my life and think about the value of the projects I'm in the middle of, as well as other valuable projects I can start to become more productive. To me, one of the biggest benefits to becoming more productive is having a better grasp of everything you're trying to do at one time. And the most difficult time to try to make sense of everything is when you're working at ground level. When you're working moment to moment, it's pretty hard to step back from what you're working on to think about how important it is. This is what makes setting intentions at the beginning of every day and week so important. The same holds true for how you spend your time in general. When you're in the thick of things, it's hard to rise above your life to see what's important and what you need to change. Hotspots are the way to do exactly that. The Hotspot Challenge. Time required, 10 minutes. Energy and focus required, 7 out of 10. Value, 7 out of 10. Fun, 9 out of 10. What you'll get out of it. You'll see your life from a perspective you've never had before and be able to reflect on the importance of all the tasks, projects, and commitments you take on. Once you externalize all the work on your plate, both in your work life and in your personal life, and capture any new tasks that come up, try scrolling through everything you've captured. Provided it's well organized, you should feel an incredible feeling of being able to envision every aspect of your life. Creating a scannable list of hotspots is my favorite way to take this feeling even further. It's one of my favorite ways to work smarter instead of just harder. After I scan through my projects, I pull tasks from them to adjust course for the week ahead. When I first sat down to create a scannable list of hotspots, it took me about 10 minutes to expand every area of my life. Over the next few weeks, as new hotspot elements came to me, I captured them in my notes app and added them to the list as I cleared my notes out a few times a week. In this chapter, I challenge you to do the same. Take 10 minutes and think about the elements in 7 areas of your life. If you've decided to do a maintenance day ritual, review your list at that time, thinking about where you want to improve the next week. When you don't act completely in accordance with what's important to you, don't be too hard on yourself. Nobody's perfect. Just adjust course. In the long run, you'll get the exact balance you want. Chapter 17, Making Room. Takeaway: letting your mind wander without distraction, such as when you're in the shower, is beneficial for brainstorming, problem solving, and becoming more creative. The neurology of a shower. The last time you took a shower, you may have noticed that after a minute or two, something interesting began to happen. Your mind started to wander. From what you had to do at work later in the day, to what you'd make for breakfast, to the fact that you forgot to buy cantaloupe for that night's party. And occasionally, during the shower, a brilliant idea or insight might even bubble to the surface. This happens to pretty much everyone. You may have also noticed that the opposite is the case when you mindlessly surf the internet or use your smartphone. While you may have the odd eureka moment when you let your mind wander in the shower, chances are you rarely have a brilliant insight while you're on your smartphone. There is a curious reason this phenomenon occurs in the shower and not when you use your smartphone. When you shower and let your mind wander, you carve out even more attentional space for yourself, which creates room for thoughts, ideas, and insights to bubble up to the surface from your unconscious mind and grab your attention. Giving your mind the time and space to wander lets you carve out more attentional space, think more deeply about everything on your plate, and, as many studies show, help you work smarter instead of just harder. Your brain's two modes. According to research, our mind seesaws between two modes throughout the day. A wandering mode, which we experience when we're taking a shower, and a central executive mode, which we experience when we're on our smartphones or focused intently on something. You can't be in both modes at once, and most experts recommend spending time in both. As Daniel Levitin writes in his book, The Organized Mind, quote, "In the seesaw of attention, Western culture overvalues the central executive mode and undervalues the daydreaming mode," end quote. And there are differences between the two that make spending time in both worthwhile. Quote, "The central executive approach to problem solving is often diagnostic, analytic, and impatient, whereas the daydreaming approach is playful, intuitive, and relaxed," he explains. Some research even shows that your brain's mind-wandering mode can be beneficial when your work is complex or requires more creativity. But with each passing year, letting your mind wander may seem to be a bit more difficult. More and more often, we seem to get sucked into using one more limbic system stimulating device, like our computers, pads, and smartphones. And while they may make us more connected, they can also prevent us from daydreaming, which makes it hard to step back from the decisions we have to make and problems we have to solve. In the average week today, the typical American spends 51.8 hours staring at screens. That includes time in front of their smartphone, tablet, laptop, desktop computer, and TV, which averages out to 7 hours and 24 minutes of screen time every day. Assuming that you sleep for 7.7 hours every night, the national average, that means you spend 45% of your waking hours staring at shiny, rectangular digital screens. Because your mind can't wander when you're focused on something, the productivity costs of being constantly connected can be massive. One of the most memorable experiments I conducted during my project was to use my smartphone for only an hour a day for 3 months. After a while of walking around without my smartphone attached at my hip, I began to notice my mind wandering to new ideas and thoughts I wouldn't have arrived at otherwise. Not only did slashing my smartphone use give me more time to spend on higher impact tasks, it also let me carve out more attentional space to think about them. Without my smartphone to focus on, my mind instinctively flipped into mind-wandering mode whenever I didn't have to focus on work, which created the space for ideas and thoughts to rise to my consciousness. To this day, if I don't carve out at least 30 minutes of attentional space every day for my mind to wander, my productivity suffers. Your brain never stops. The reason that eureka moments seem to strike you from out of the blue when you carve out more attentional space for yourself is simple. Your brain never stops thinking. One of my favorite neurological studies was led by Op Dijksterhuis at the University of Amsterdam. In the study, participants were given information about four cars and then were asked to pick which car they would buy. Researchers are usually a tricky bunch, and this study was no exception. They made one of the four cars significantly more attractive than the others to see if participants could identify it as the best. They split the participants into two groups. The first group received information about four features per car, and the second received significantly more information, 12 features per car, for a total of either 16 or 48 features in total. Each of those groups was again split into two. Before participants were asked to pick a car, each of each group's participants were then either given 4 minutes to closely study the features of the car, or given a series of totally unrelated word scramble puzzles to focus on for 4 minutes. This second group was seemingly at a disadvantage to figure out which car was the best, because they had no time to consciously think about which car was the best. So who fared better? Here's where the study gets fascinating. With just 4 options per car, participants who could consciously think about their choices perform much better. That's not all that surprising. With just a few options, it was pretty easy for them to deduce which model is the best. But when participants had 12 options to consider for each of the 4 cars, 48 options to weigh in total, the group that could only unconsciously process the options outperformed the group who had 4 full minutes to think deeply about which car was best. And here's the kicker. They outperformed the conscious group by a massive margin. The conscious thought group picked the right car 23% of the time, while the unconscious thought group picked the right car 60% of the time. Several years after the experiment was conducted, a research team at Carnegie Mellon University performed a similar study again. But instead of having participants do word scramble puzzles, they had them memorize a sequence of numbers while they scanned their brain activity inside an fMRI machine. This team discovered something fascinating. While the brain regions responsible for memorizing numbers were, of course, fired up, so were the prefrontal cortices of the participants, which continued to process the car problem as they completely focused on memorizing the numbers. The unconscious minds of the participants wandered while they processed something unrelated to the task at hand. Though there is some debate in the scientific community over how powerful our subconscious minds are, these studies illustrate something profound, that our minds never stop thinking. Even when we focus on something with our complete attention, our brain continues, like a computer, to have windows open in the background. And if a problem is particularly complex or requires a creative solution, our subconscious minds may even do a better job, especially when we give ourselves more attentional space to work on it. Making room. I began experimenting with more ways to shift into daydreaming mode during my project. While I was planning for my TEDx talk, I left my phone at home and wandered around Canada's National Gallery, just a short bus ride away from where I was living, with only a pen and notepad. To come up with new productivity experiments, I went on nature walks at lunchtime while I let my ideas germinate. On the weekend, I sat in a busy coffee shop with just a notepad to capture any thoughts that came to me. In every instance in which I carved out time to let my mind wander, I made a point of keeping a notepad close by and shutting off the distractions around me to clear even more attentional space. And every time, I captured at least a dozen thoughts, ideas, tasks, and people I should contact or catch up with. Without fail, whenever I carved out space for my mind to wander, countless thoughts would break through my attentional barrier, and I captured them in my notepad so I could deal with them later. In a way, my whole project was centered around connecting dots and coming up with creative ideas, and nothing helped me accomplish that more than carving out attentional space to do nothing. Even today, In the middle of writing this book, I schedule more time for mind wandering than I ever have before, which has let me capture several hundred ideas for this book. As Steven Johnson so brilliantly put it in a 6-part documentary, How We Got to Now, quote, new ideas are fundamentally networks of other ideas, end quote. People who are paid big bucks in the knowledge economy are paid to solve problems and connect dots, which makes carving out time for mind wandering that much more important, particularly after you capture the unresolved things weighing on your psyche. Luckily, our brains are built for connecting dots, which makes them the perfect tool to use in the knowledge economy, provided we use them intelligently. By the way, it also helped that I defined a structure for this book ahead of time, which, much like the car problem, gave my mind something concrete to chip away at in the background as I focused on other things. Out of all the methods I tried in my project, though, nothing worked quite as well as simply sitting in a room with a pen and a sheet of paper. Every day or two, I would set a timer, usually for 15 minutes, and then simply give my mind permission to venture off and go wherever it wanted to go. In a way, it was the opposite of a planning session or brain dump. Instead of staying in central executive mode, I shifted into daydreaming mode and captured the ideas and thoughts that would have gone unnoticed otherwise. I still use the same ritual today, and I'm almost always surprised at the ideas, thoughts, and even a few to-dos that come up when I create the attentional space for them to do so. If this sounds strange, that's because it is. But your brain is also a peculiar machine, and sitting inside it right now are a ton of valuable thoughts, ideas, and insights it has been processing in the background that are waiting to be captured. A mind capture ritual is another great ritual to add to your maintenance day, or perform whenever you feel overwhelmed and need to instantly create more attentional space for yourself. The more attentional space you have, the calmer you'll feel, and the more productive you'll become. Your brain also continues to process and consolidate new information into memory as you sleep, which is why sleeping on a problem can work wonders, and why studying before bed will help you perform better on tests. This is also a great reason to define your three outcomes for the next day at the end of the previous day, or before you head to bed. Mental bliss. During my year of the Productivity Project, I was able to secure almost as many insights with the other daydreaming techniques I tried, like visiting an art gallery or going for a nature walk. As long as they let me flip into mind-wandering mode and I had a notepad nearby, they worked. Generally speaking, the less attention the ritual required, the better. But even tactics like reading novels, which I thought required a lot of attention, often let me flip into daydreaming mode and capture new ideas. Whether knitting, gardening, yoga, going for a long drive, walking somewhere without headphones, taking a candlelit bath, or visiting an art gallery works best for you. The key is that you take the time to shift your mind into wandering mode. Whenever Einstein had a difficult nut he was trying to crack, he would do much the same and play the violin until the answer he was searching for seemingly struck him from out of the blue. The same can work for you, too. Worth noting, I devote an entire later chapter of the audiobook to the importance of taking breaks and disconnecting from your work. Working insanely hard without recharging is a recipe for burnout, since you rely on your brain so much at work and likely face more pressure than ever before. Breaks have never been more important. The American Psychological Association, APA, recently named 9 of the very best stress relief strategies. Unlike quick fixes like shopping, gambling, drinking, and eating that don't actually reduce the cortisol levels in your body, the hormone your body produces in response to stress, the 9 strategies the organization recommends all actually reduce your cortisol levels. Just as important, most of them also appear, at least on the surface, to flip your brain into mind-wandering mode, which makes them doubly valuable tasks to try when you're looking to carve out attentional space for yourself. They include exercising or playing sports, reading, meditation, which I'll talk about later, listening to music, investing in a creative hobby, praying, going for a nature walk, spending time with friends and family, and going for a massage. Whatever your method of choice, taking the time to flip your mind into daydreaming mode can be one of the most productive things you do. Rest assured that when you take a break from your work, your brain will continue working in the background, even though you may not be. And if you're trying to tackle a particularly creative or complex problem, it may even do a better job than your conscious prefrontal cortex will. Your brain is a powerful machine, but you have to capitalize on its strengths and accommodate its weaknesses. Giving it space to slip into daydreamy mode while externalizing the tasks, projects, and commitments you're working on does exactly that. Whenever you're in mind-wandering mode, again, make sure you capture what your brain comes up with so that no great ideas slip through the cracks. The Wandering Challenge. Time required, 15 minutes. Energy and focus required, 2 out of 10. Value, 7 out of 10. Fun, 9 out of 10. What you'll get out of it? A wealth of brand new ideas that are residing in your brain, waiting to be harvested once you give them the necessary attentional space. You probably saw this challenge coming from a mile away. My challenge for you this time is to let your mind wander for at least 15 minutes tomorrow, and to capture any valuable thoughts, ideas, or things you have to do that break through your attentional barrier. My favorite way to do this is to sit somewhere I won't be distracted or interrupted with just a pen and notepad and set a timer for 15 minutes. If you're like me, you'll be stunned at what comes to mind. You may even want to keep going for a longer period of time, say half an hour. Part 6, The Attention Muscle. Chapter 18, Becoming More Deliberate. Takeaway. Research shows that we only focus on what's in front of us 53% of the time. Developing a strong attention muscle is what makes it possible to focus more on the task at hand, which lets us spend our time and attention more efficiently in the moment. Too much wandering. Quote, the successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Bruce Lee. While carving out time to deliberately let your mind wander, lets your brain form connections, relax, and think more creatively, when it comes time to do actual work, a wandering mind won't help you all that much. Chances are your mind wanders more than you think. An interesting study conducted by Harvard psychologists Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert found that we spend 47% of our waking hours in this daydreaming mode. In other words, throughout the day, while you're supposed to be focused on more important things, if you're like most people, you focus on something other than the task at hand half of the time. You only bring 53% of your attention to the table. It goes without saying that this has huge productivity costs, especially when you consider how intricately connected your time and attention are. The less attention you devote to a task, the more time you have to spend to complete it, because you work less efficiently. I try to use the word efficiency as little as possible, especially as far as productivity is concerned, since it reduces work down to something that feels cold and corporate. But there's no better word to use here. When you aren't giving your work your full focus, you simply aren't spending your time or attention efficiently. 1 hour of intense focus on your work is worth 2 or 3 hours of focusing on your work 53% of the time. Time is the most limited productivity resource you have. By managing your attention intelligently, just like with intelligently managing your energy, you can spend it that much more wisely. Stop. Challenge time. Before we dive any deeper into this section of the audiobook, I have a quick early chapter challenge for you. As you listen to this part of the audiobook, I challenge you to break out a notepad or sheet of paper and jot down how many times your mind begins to wander against your will. How often it flips into daydreaming mode, resists listening on, begins to worry, tempts you to pick up your phone or do something else, or gets distracted. We'll tackle each of these roadblocks in turn, but as with managing your time and energy, it's helpful to know your starting point. Whenever your mind wanders, don't worry. Mind wandering is simply your brain's default mode. Even after years of meditating and doing my best to train my attention muscle, my mind frequently wanders too. Simply make a note that your mind has wandered, and, if you want, what it wandered off to focus on or think about. And then gently bring your attention back to, in this case, focusing on listening to this audiobook. I use the word gently because it's pretty easy to be hard on yourself as you rein in your focus, even though mind wandering is 100% normal. This is also a cool hack to use when you're working hard on something important. Just keep a notepad by your desk and make a note of every distraction or interruption that pops up and tempts you to interrupt what you're working on. And then get back to work. And if you need to, deal with the would-be interruptions after. The joy of being deliberate. As I write these words, I'm sitting in a small tea shop in Ottawa. The tea store is located in the heart of Ottawa. It seats only about 20 people. I love coming here to read, write, and think. It's just a few steps from Canada's National Gallery, where I go to let my mind wander from time to time. The part I like most about the shop isn't the tea, though. It's the deliberate and thoughtful way they approach the tea ritual. After you choose one of the 100-some teas on the wall of the shop, the staff will invite you to have a seat. Then they'll bring a small pot of the tea you choose to your table and light a candle under the pot to keep it warm. This shop has the best tea I've found in Ottawa. Every variety is meticulously sourced or blended from scratch, and the care that goes into each variety is inspiring. Since starting my project, I've found myself oddly drawn to places like this. Places that, in a world full of inexpensive tea and K-cups, stand above the fray and are incredibly caring and methodical about the work they do. Like the Scotchmaker, who spends years crafting his or her technique and recipe. Or the owner of the winery who strives to craft the perfect vintage. Or the accomplished musician who becomes a master of the guitar after tens of thousands of hours of practice. These are people who invest time and energy into being deliberate in a world where working deliberately is hard. These people take deliberateness further than most, but they've all homed in on a really powerful idea. Productivity isn't about doing more, faster. It's about doing the right things, deliberately and with intention. This is why carving out time and intentional space around your tasks is so powerful. Doing so gives you the room to work on higher return tasks in the moment, fend off low return tasks, and become more productive. One of the reasons we make so many resolutions around New Year's is that during the holidays we can step back from our work and lives to think and reflect about other things. The same thing happens when you take the time to step back from your work and your life on a moment-to-moment basis. You'll plan more, come up with better ideas, and become able to work more deliberately. If a tactic like separating your high-return tasks from your low-return tasks is a way of working more deliberately in general, and a tactic like the rule of three is a way of working more deliberately on a weekly and daily basis, training your attention muscle lets you work more deliberately in the moment. A strong attention muscle is what makes it possible to work deliberately and focus on your task at hand more than 53% of the time. This is the final missing piece of working more deliberately, but it's also the toughest. The three parts of your attention muscle. Just checking in, has your mind wandered off yet? How we spend every moment makes or breaks our productivity. Technology and quick fixes provide us with more stimulation than tasks and projects that are meaningful. The faster we work, the harder it becomes to work deliberately. This is what makes staying focused and aware so hard. And this is what causes you to spend 47% of your time focusing on something other than the task at hand. Thankfully, you can build up your attention muscle in a number of ways so you can focus on them better throughout the day, and all are backed up by a ton of research. According to neuroscientists, our attention is made up of three parts. Your central executive. This is your thinking and planning brain that lives in your prefrontal cortex. So far, particularly in the procrastination section, I've done my best to write this book in a way that will fire up this part of your brain. It's mostly the other two parts of your attention muscle that I'll focus on in this section. Focus. This involves narrowing your attentional spotlight to focus on the task at hand, which helps you work more efficiently. And awareness. This means becoming aware of what's going on in your internal and external environments, which helps you work more mindfully and deliberately. These three parts combine to make up your larger attention muscle. Training your attention muscle involves building up all three. Chapter 19, Attention Hijackers. Takeaway. Dealing with distractions before they happen, like by shutting off alerts on your phone for new messages, helps you avoid attention hijacking interruptions. It can take as much as 25 minutes to refocus on the task at hand after being interrupted. Bursting the focus bubble. Tactics like setting daily intentions, externalizing your tasks, seeing your life as a collection of hotspots, and creating space for your mind to wander all help you see your work and life with more clarity